Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Wisconsin's top Republicans panned Governor Tony Evers' plan to let counties and some cities raise their sales tax, new guidance allowing special voting deputies to help nursing home residents cast their ballots for the April 6th election could be in jeopardy.
More groups are now eligible for COVID-19 vaccine in our state.
And Wisconsin is set to get even more doses next week following the approval of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine. Rewind, your week in review for March 5th.
I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Wisconsin's top Republicans panned Governor Tony Evers' plan to let counties and some municipalities raise their sales tax by 0.5% if voters approve via a referendum process. Those comments came during a Wisconsin Counties Association virtual roundtable event that aired this week and featured the four legislative leaders. There were a bunch of budget highlights that came from this discussion. I'll run through a couple of them now. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said Republicans would start from scratch, as they did 2 years ago with Governor Evers' budget. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue said that he would that the transportation budget Governor Evers proposed would likely remain intact, and he supports the I-94 expansion in Milwaukee. And Voss, meanwhile, was also critical of the nearly $2 billion in new borrowing that Evers proposed in his capital budget. He also signaled that he doesn't want to fund work on office buildings in Milwaukee and Madison. But one point of emphasis during this discussion was raising revenue for counties and cities. Senate Minority Leader Janet Buley repeatedly called for finding new funding streams to help localities cover essential services. Let's hear now from Leader Buley on that issue, followed by a response from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss.
If we are at a point where expenses are going up and revenue is staying absolutely the same, what are they supposed to do? If we are not looking at finding ways to increase our revenue as E is just going up, 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 how are we supposed to assist the counties? I understand your reluctance to raise, but what about create? What about identify those areas where other states have fees or taxes? Why can't we, where we haven't done it before, why can't we help out the counties and give them some powers to be able to get revenue?
I mean, it has taken us well over a decade to get us out of the top 10 tax states. And I understand from your perspective, that's not something that's laudable. You want to be higher taxed. That is something that I just fundamentally disagree with. You think it's better to have the government collect the money and give it out to certain people based on whether or not you like what they're doing with it. I like the idea that they can go to the voters and they can ask their own permission. They can convince people in their local jurisdiction if they want to raise their own revenues and spend it as they see fit. Now, you're often somebody I know who points out how many referenda pass. Well, frankly, that's exactly the process that we want to go through, where people get the right to tax themselves, not have a politician who lives in a faraway place in the state somehow say it's okay to have taxes on the people that never even get to vote for them.
Wisconsin has a 5% sales tax, and it already allows counties to raise that burden by 0.5%. All but four of the state's 72 counties have decided to do so. JR, were you surprised at all by the Republican reaction this week to the governor's sales tax proposal?
Not really. There was a somewhat similar proposal last session that was really focused on Milwaukee County that would allow Milwaukee County to increase its sales tax. That would then benefit the county, the city, and other municipalities in Milwaukee County. It at least got a hearing in the assembly, but didn't go any farther than that. And the argument at the time was that, you know, Republicans in general aren't in favor of raising taxes. There's a new layer to that discussion this time around, which is the federal money that is flowing into Wisconsin as part of the COVID-19 legislation. Now, the Senate, as we speak, is debating the latest version of those efforts. That bill, though, one estimate I saw had like $5.5 billion for the state of Wisconsin, counties, and cities. That's a lot of money. I mean, $3.2 billion is going to the state if this bill passes as did the House. That's a lot of money for the states and or cities and counties in Wisconsin. So the argument is, how do you justify raising taxes on people during a pandemic you have that kind of federal money coming in. The counter to that, though, is that local governments need a long-term solution to their needs. We're talking 2 decades of shared revenue, which is state aid to local governments, basically being flat. We're talking about increased responsibilities on cities and counties from the state. How do they deliver those services when you're not getting more revenue, and there also are these restrictions on property tax increases? So no long-term solution right now that I see from talking to people, but that federal money is gonna at least ease the burden in the near term, and the discussion may then come back up later on down the line.
Right, and Wisconsin already has a strong reliance on property taxes to fund local services. Another moment I want to highlight from this discussion that got a lot of attention was a different exchange between Senator Buley and Speaker Voss. Buley basically cited towns in her districts that lack paid ambulance services and said that voters there would decline to raise revenue for those services via referendum, you know, raise taxes on themselves. Voss pressed her on that and asked her what that would signal. Buley responded it would mean voters are perhaps not smart. She quickly came out with a statement after that discussion aired, saying that her response was sarcastic and a poor choice of words. Jared, what do you make of that gaffe?
A couple of things. One, sarcasm doesn't come across very well sometimes in a forum like that, especially a virtual one, especially when your sarcasm is about the intelligence of your constituents. The question I kind of had for people this week was, okay, what's this mean for Buley? Is this something like that's really a bad thing that detrimental to her prospects winning re-election? Because don't forget, Buley's up next year. Her district has been trending less and less blue for a long time. It's just reality for Democrats that rural Wisconsin has not been very kind to them lately. And in the next round of redistricting, it's unlikely you're gonna find more Democrats to put in that district. It's likely gonna get a little bit more purplish, even a little bit reddish. The big question though is, will Buley run? I've asked her before and she hasn't made up her mind about 2022, so it's hard to say what this means for her politically until we know what her political future is going to be or her intentions are.
Exactly. We'll definitely keep an eye on that going forward. Moving on to topic two, Republican lawmakers this week unveiled 2 bills targeting transgender athletes and that would essentially prohibit them from competing in women's sports. The 2 bills would apply to K-12 sports and also collegiate sports. Essentially, the bills would create 3 different categories for sports based on the sex of the participants assigned by a doctor at birth. We've got males, men, and boys, female women and girls, and both sexes or co-ed. The ACLU says that 24 other states have introduced transgender bans in sports as of last month. So Governor Evers has responded to these bills already in a tweet this week Tuesday. He wrote, "My message to Wisconsin's transgender kids and students today is simple. I see you. You are welcome. You are wanted and you belong." We'll hear more from lawmakers on that shortly, but I first want to ask you, JR, if these bills do get through the legislature, you know, Governor Evers is all but certain to veto them, what motivates Republican lawmakers to introduce measures that almost assuredly won't win the support of a Democratic governor?
Now, this is the new front in the culture wars. The gay marriage front is, for the most part, over. The abortion one will probably never die down. This is a new front in the culture wars. Remember, if you look at polling, it looks like people, generally speaking, don't like the idea of boys participating in girls' athletics. Now, you dive into the nuances of this issue, and it's not that simple, right? I mean, the WIAA, which is the governing body for Wisconsin high school sports, I believe they require somebody who's transitioning to take hormones for at least a year, I believe it is, before they can participate in girls' sports. I believe it's also a similar requirement from the NCAA. The WIAA told us that they have no records of any transgender athletes winning a state championship, for example. But this is one of those issues that it motivates the base. And I get the impression that's what Republicans are after here. They see it as, one, an issue with broad support. Again, looking at polling, that it cuts across party lines. To them, it's a common sense issue. And it also kind of fires up the base. What I don't know, though, is if this is more than just a base issue, this is a motivator issue at the polls next year. Oftentimes, when I've asked people, like, well, what's going to define an election, it comes down to a couple big things. Number one, economic security. How do you feel about your job? How do you feel about your tax bill? How do you feel about your future? Other ones are like, how do you feel about your kids' education? And schools, those kinds of things. I don't know if this fits into that hierarchy of issues, and I don't know if you're on the fence about Governor Evers, for example, and you go to the polls at 2022, would this be the issue that makes you vote for or against them? It's, you know, remains to be seen. But it is still one of those motivator issues for the base. And, you know, Republicans have had some issues with the base lately. There's a contingent in the Republican base that feels like Republicans didn't fight hard enough, quote unquote, for Donald Trump in contesting the results of the November election. So there's a little bit of enthusiasm issue there that some Republicans feel like this is one of the issues that can help pump up that base and get them engaged and charged up.
Right. And I think, though, the one thing I would add to that is, you know, the legislation that sort of signals a party's virtues isn't, you know, unique to this session, right? We've seen Democrats during the last 10 years of Republican control, you know, propose their own measures to legalize recreational marijuana, to ensure that feminine hygiene products aren't taxed, things like that that have never gotten a hearing or really any movement in the Republican-controlled legislature. And we're seeing some similar provisions, right, in Governor Evers' budget that would also not gain traction in this legislature. I want to jump now to Assembly Bill author Representative Barb Dietrich, who is speaking about this bill during a news conference unveiling it this week, followed by a response from LGBTQ Caucus Chair Lee Snodgrass.
Now, in a fractured, well-meaning attempt at inclusion, women's achievements have once again been put at great risk of loss. Biological females are losing opportunities at titles, records, scholarships, and even participation at times. Additionally, by ignoring the scientific biological fact that males have higher bone density, greater muscle mass, and often greater height, women are being put in physical danger of greater injury in competition.
When code words like fairness and leveling the playing field are brought forth in these bills, these are dog whistles for discrimination and exclusion. While sports may be binary for now, humans are not. We must allow students the respect of sports participation in the gender with which they identify. Protection of emotional health and well-being of students does not stop when the bell rings and class is over. It carries over the courts, the fields, the tracks, and bills like this one that are being proposed today place minor children in harm's way with false claims of inequality.
Special voting deputies were cleared to return to Wisconsin nursing homes and care centers under guidance the Wisconsin Elections Commission unanimously adopted for the April 6th election. But a Republican-led committee Friday morning directed the commission to hold off on issuing that guidance to clerks until it could complete an administrative rule process. On Wednesday this week, the Wisconsin Elections Commission issued this guidance, or voted to issue this guidance to clerks, that would allow these deputies to return to these facilities in person if they allow entry. The practice was put on hold in March 2020 with the onset of COVID-19. Clerks were then directed to automatically mail ballots to those facilities instead. The decision came after the Joint Committee for the Review of Administrative Rules questioned WEC's ability to issue the directives in the first place and ordered it to go through the rulemaking process last month. Commissioners then voted to issue the guidance to clerks and draft a scope statement for an emergency rule tied to the April 6th election. Then on Thursday, after their meeting, the Wisconsin Elections Commission formally notified the Department of Administration of its intent to create an administrative rule for special voting deputies in the April 6th election. WEC, I should note, maintains it is able to issue guidance to clerks without first going through the entire administrative rule process. Still, JCRER co-chair Steve Noss was quick to call out WEC and ask them to immediately rescind their guidance. He said, quote, "It is shocking that the people responsible for protecting the integrity of our elections would so openly violate the law, even after being told what they were doing was improper." His committee then voted Friday morning by paper ballot 7-3 along party lines to direct WEC to not issue its guidance until it completes the administrative rule process. JR, is this the first public showdown we've seen between the Wisconsin Elections Commission and Republican lawmakers following the November election?
Well, I think it's the first example of the JCRAR micromanaging the Elections Commission. So kind of the inspiration for this, if you will, is the guidance that the Elections Commission had had in place since October of 2016, telling local clerks, if you get an absentee ballot mailed back to you and the witness, for example, is missing information such as a zip code or piece of the address, you can fill it in. That really didn't become an issue until after President Trump lost Wisconsin in November by about 21,000 votes. Then this became part of the lawsuits that he filed unsuccessfully, overturned results, and you started hearing more complaints from Republicans of the commission's exceeding its authority and providing guidance that lawmakers didn't approve. That's really what I think is the inspiration here, that you're starting to see this committee exerting its authority over the commission and kind of sending a signal of, we're not going to let you do this anymore. Now, I don't know how far this is going to go or how much they're going to dive into every little thing that the commission does, but the commission was created, I believe in 2015, came online in 2016, to administer elections. And agencies often fill in the blanks of the law, you know, like through the administrative rules process or through providing guidance. The question is, what's the line going to be with Republican lawmakers on what this commission can do on its own without going through that rules process? And again, you know, look at this discussion right here. You have to have two visits to a nursing home before you can just send the absentee ballots. Well, the guidance slash framework of the rule says you can have a televisit. Basically, you can call. Does the commission have the authority to interpret state law to say that? I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to say either way. But the Republicans I've talked to who feel like they don't have that power to do that. This is what we're talking about, like how they're going to be looking over everything the commission does and saying, no, you can't. It also comes in the context of all these election bills Republicans have proposed in the last 2 weeks. I think we're up to around a dozen or so at this point. It's all back about that base issue I talked about a while ago, that Republicans who feel like they didn't fight hard enough for Donald Trump, this is going to be something to address the base in the end and kind of assure them that they're, quote unquote, fighting for the cause.
And I think it's worth reemphasizing that COVID really did shine a light on areas of state election law that, you know, were sort of ambiguous or didn't account for circumstances in which we'd be, you know, experiencing an outbreak of the virus. During the, you know, Elections Commission meeting this week, there was discussion, right, about, you know, under state law, as you mentioned, there is a requirement to visit a facility twice, to make two attempts to visit a facility to help residents vote. But what constitutes an attempt, right? Does a phone call work? And also, does it make sense to pay special voting deputies to go in person to a facility if they know they're going to be denied entry because the facility is closed to visitors? These are all questions that, you know, the folks at WEC are grappling with that will probably ultimately need to be resolved by changes in state law.
Yeah, and don't forget, Dean Knutson is a Republican appointee on the commission. He actually authored the law that created the commission, got away the old Government Accountability Board. He also used to serve in the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules. He knows his stuff fairly well. He's had some experience with it. He talked about, in his words, the absurdity of the law as it's written to not anticipate how do you operate during a pandemic. A lot of the stuff we're talking about now with the way elections run last year may be a one-time thing. It's totally unique to a pandemic that we will hopefully only see once in our lifetimes, right? But it exposed a lot of things in the commission, you could argue, exceeded its authority in how it addressed this stuff, but did it have a choice during a pandemic like we went through in 2020?
That's right. Moving on, Assembly Republicans sent a letter to Governor Evers this week urging him to prioritize funds for in-person schools. Let's hear from Representative Cindy Duco, who spoke in favor of that plan, and then we'll hear from Governor Evers, who addressed it at a WisPolitics news conference.
All the schools in my district have been in person, and they've been doing a great job, and our parents are thrilled to death. But they're not receiving the funding that some of the other schools are. MPS received $292 million. Think of that, $292 million. That comes out to over $4,000 per student. One of the schools in my district, Kettle Moraine, received $330,000. That comes out to $91 per student. Kettle Moraine has been in person in the classroom since September. They have had to have extra PPE, extra custodial staff, extra nurses. They've rented outside classrooms. They've had extra teachers. They have spent over $2 million to put those kids in the classroom face-to-face so they can have the education they deserve. We need the governor to help schools like that out.
It costs money to do it virtually. It costs money to do it in person. And on top of it, they're asking me to use CARES money, federal money that we have already allocated to the University of Wisconsin system so that they can increase their testing so that they can get more kids on campus. Whether that idea has validity or not, and I don't think it has much, it's out of the question. I cannot order schools to open. That's not part of my ability as governor. What I can do is get shots in arms and help them get the PPE in order to keep people safe. That's my job.
Assembly Republicans are prioritizing $21 million in federal COVID relief funds. It's important to remember that the state, Governor Evers, and lawmakers control a very small portion of the $686 million the state is set to receive from the federal government for schools. But the Republican-led Joint Finance Committee last month decided to distribute $70 million of that to those schools that are doing in-person learning. The Assembly GOP letter, I'll read from it now, said, quote, "Schools should be rewarded for doing the right thing for their students and families." Jared, we talked about this issue at length last week. Is there anything else you want to add about the federal piece of this?
Yeah, just one thing real quick. I'm picking up signals that this conversation, while it's focused on federal money that we have or kind of is flowing right now, it's also going to factor in the conversation about what kind of additional state aid schools might get in the next budget. Republicans want to reward those who have been open, who are providing in-person instruction. The question is, can you create a mechanism to send money to schools in the budget that would be constitutional and accomplish that? Again, I'm not a lawyer. I've talked to lawmakers who are trying to figure out if they can do that. And I don't want to say that the federal money is going to offset a need for state funds necessarily, but it's going to have to factor, a lot of Republicans' minds are going to have to factor into the conversation of how do you fund schools when they've gotten a lot of money from the federal government. Now, the counter has been that schools need this money because you're talking about pandemic costs, about especially in districts like Milwaukee-Madison, needs to look at infrastructure, ventilation, all these issues that make it safer to go back to school. You know, how do you try to not give schools more? They're dealing with this issue. So I'm just kind of laying out a marker for people. Watch how this plays out in that budget discussion for joint finance kind of in May and June. I think you're really going to see where Republicans are heading with this discussion once we get to that package of K-12 education.
Yeah, and I want to note that outside of state funding, there's also other measures that lawmakers or Governor Evers could consider to sort of help kids catch up after sort of falling behind from a year of, you know, for some districts, totally virtual instruction. Governor Evers also in that West Politics Luncheon talked about robust summer school programs. He talked about maybe allowing different school districts or all school districts to start before the mandated September 1st start date, which has been unsuccessful in the past because of concerns from folks in the tourism industry. One thing that came to mind this week, though, is Senator Luther Olson, who was the chair of the Education Committee in that chamber, is now retired, but he was a very strong opponent of that. So we'll see if the pandemic has changed anything or changed the calculation for lawmakers going forward.
Yeah, also separate from the governor said, Senator Darling and Representative Knodel, two Republicans, also have circulated a bill for co-sponsorship that would allow schools to start before September 1st. You have to get a waiver right now. The school, summer school thing that Evers talked about at the West Poly Luncheon, kind of curious what that might look like. I don't think my boys would be very happy about it, but might that be something that helps kids catch up? Because the start date, I've heard Republicans say, lawmakers say, if you're going to allow them to go for an extra week, probably not going to make up for a year of being virtual. But are you talking about 3 weeks, a month? Like, what are you talking about starting early? So be interesting debate in the budget.
Definitely. Let's move on now to our COVID-19 update. Wisconsin is set to get 47,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson COVID-19 vaccine next week. As of Thursday, 58% of people 65 and older had received at least one dose, 27% received both doses, and Governor Evers this morning just announced that 1 million Wisconsinites have received the first dose of the vaccine. Wisconsin's COVID-19 vaccine registry opened this week, and also President Biden on Tuesday said that the United States was on track to have enough supply of coronavirus vaccines for every adult in America by the end of May. That's 2 months quicker than the end of July date he publicly set previously. Let's hear now from Department of Health Services Deputy Secretary Julie Williams-Van Dyke on the Biden administration's announcement this week and to what extent that's a reasonable benchmark here.
President Biden is saying that there's going to be enough vaccine for anyone who wants, any adult who wants it by the end of May. So assuming that's true, will vaccinators here in Wisconsin be able to administer that vaccine to everyone who wants it by the end of May?
I think eligibility
for everybody in May is a very realistic goal. Now, it will depend on how many people we already have vaccinated in May, whether we'll be able to finish eligibility for everybody who wants in May. You know, I think it's likely to go into June and maybe even early July, because we're not going to have unlimited vaccine supply. We'll just have enough to get to everyone. What I hear in the president's statements is it will no longer be you have to be part of this eligibility group. You don't have to be someone over age 65. You don't have to be a teacher. You just have to be an adult in Wisconsin, and we'll be able to get vaccine.
On the legislative side of things, Republican-backed COVID-19 provisions to prohibit mandatory vaccines and bar health officials from limiting gatherings in places of worship received hearings before an assembly committee this week. Meanwhile, at the federal level, the Senate began debate on President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID package. That debate was held up by Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson, who ordered the Senate clerk to read the 600-page bill out loud Thursday. It took about 10 hours, I believe, according to media reports, to draw out the timeline for passing it. Republicans are also expected to introduce a series of amendments to further stretch out that process. At the state level, it's unclear if or when lawmakers may pass a broader COVID package. Speaker Voss last week said he'd like to revisit COVID relief, but there's no word on a potential timeline for that. Jarrett, what do you think the chances are that we take another look at a sweeping COVID bill?
Well, it'd be fascinating because in the bill now before Congress, there'd be an extension of the unemployment benefits. That would require, if I remember correctly, the state to pass enabling legislation to capture that enhanced federal aid to pay for the unemployment. That means another debate about that one-week suspension before you can start collecting unemployment benefits. So that might be a vehicle to put more stuff in to get something done. That's what I'm watching in that debate for the state legislature. It will not be back until at least March 16th, I believe, on the floor.
Right. And up to this point, you know, we started the session with sort of a gung-ho, we're going to pass a broad Republican-backed bill. But since then, it's been sort of a piecemeal approach. So that may continue going forward in the coming months. Jared, not a lot of time left, so let's move on to your stock picks. What's rising this week?
Broadband. I think it's like the one high-profile provision in the Governor Evers budget that everybody agrees upon. Now, Governor Evers wants $200 million for broadband expansion. I don't know Republicans will do that much, but you also have Charter announcing this week like a nearly $700 million investment in broadband in Wisconsin. You also have Senator Tammy Baldwin now on a chairing a subcommittee that has some authority over broadband, so a lot of good signs for expansion in Wisconsin. But as much as the attention is on broadband as like the big thing that Republicans like in the Evers budget, as I've read through this thing, and I've gone through it twice now because I'm a dork, there are lots of provisions in there that are good for rural Wisconsin, that are good for the ag community, that I think Republicans are going to embrace. Now, you mentioned before that Robin Voss, they're going to blow it up and start from base, which is true. You know, they might basically not start off the governor's budget as a starting point, but it's kind of some issue of semantics because when the Legislative Fiscal Bureau does the papers for each budget area, they will have in there, here's base spending right now, here's an option you could do, here's Governor Evers' option. It's just a matter of like how many votes it takes to add in an Evers option versus taking it out. So it's neither here nor there, but I think there are some of the things that besides broadband they're going to do. They're just not a lot of the big ticket items that Evers wants.
All right, we'll move on now
mixed,
to...
We have Ron Kind, so Ron Kind. Look, Ron Kind said he's thinking about running for U.S. Senate. I've been up here for two decades. Ron Kind has talked about running for governor and U.S. Senate on multiple occasions and never pulled the trigger. The only way that people I talk to think Ron Kind is going to run for U.S. Senate is if his district is so more Republican once the new lines are drawn that it's basically unwinnable. We won't know about that, though, and probably until maybe early next year. That's awfully late to get into a Senate primary when you've already got several candidates who are in, several more about to get in, and a high-profile race against, you know, possibly Ron Johnson or another Republican. Two, you're seeing more and more signs from Republicans of Kind being a target. Congressional Leadership Fund had a memo this week talking about how he's one of three seats are really targeting for the Republicans to win back then net five they need to win the House control. But again, go back to that redistricting process. Until we see Kind's district, it's hard to know for sure if he's really a target. Oh, and by the way, he's a target because of Trump voters. We don't know for sure that Trump voters will turn out if Trump's not in the ballot. I mean, Trump won Kind's district in 16 and 20, but Kind won re-election in 18 with almost 60% of the vote. Now, granted, his opponent was not well-funded, as Derek Van Orden was this past fall, but that's a sign of not real sure how Trump voters do without Trump on the ballot.
All right, falling.
Oh, and falling, Trump lawsuits. So, like, the president was not going to overturn the results of the election in Wisconsin, but we're now seeing the last kind of housekeeping items with the lawsuits that he and supporters filed. The U.S. Supreme Court has now refused to take up two of the three appeals that were filed with that court. The justices will talk today about the final lawsuit. Gonna guess they're gonna shoot that one down too. They have no appetite to take these cases. Beyond that, a Minneapolis attorney who filed a lawsuit in a Washington, D.C. based federal court had tried to, again, overturn Wisconsin's results in four other states. Plaintiffs included a couple of lawmakers here in Wisconsin. That judge who overseen that case referred that lawyer to an ethics commissioner, basically a committee that could, you know, discipline him, saying that the lawsuit was unfounded and grandstanding. So you're kind of seeing the last of the housekeeping items with all these lawsuits, and the bottom line is that nothing's going to change, through the courts at least, Wisconsin's elections from last fall.
Thanks for that, JR. I'm Brianna Riley.
And I'm JR Ross.
And that's Rewind for March 5th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.